Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Just about once a month, we sit down with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles to talk about what's going on in city government and around town. And today's that day. Mayor Vi Lyles, welcome back on this rainy day.
Good morning, Mike.
You were elected just about a year ago.
It has been almost a year. December's going to be here in the next couple of weeks. And I tell you, it has been the fastest year of my life, and I've had a long life.
Well, I was going to ask you, in terms of what you wanted to accomplish, what you thought you could accomplish, what was on your to-do list at this time last year before you took office, How much of that have you gotten around to? Have you been able to accomplish? Are you happy with where we are?
I am very happy with where we are. I have to just say thanks to the Charlotte voters that passed the $50 million affordable housing bond. I want to say thanks to the council for making a decision about the framework of how to use those housing bonds. And if you ask me what I expected to work on, it was always around housing and jobs and the mobility that helps you get back and forth. And none of that has changed. Now, I have to admit, I tell you, I didn't expect we'd have a new Panther Stadium conversation with a new owner. I had no idea that we'd have the NBA All-Star Game in February. I had no idea that we'd have some of the changes going on. But at the same time, all of those are really good things. But the fundamentals of this community is the ability to work and have a home in a safe neighborhood.
Well, let's fill in some blanks here. This Panther Stadium conversation, that got my ear.
Well, I know. I shouldn't have said it that way. I meant, I think about the Panthers as a stadium. That's my operational mind going. But really what we're talking about is how we work with the new owner of the Panthers.
So he hasn't asked you for a new stadium.
He has not asked me for a new stadium.
Yet.
He has not asked me for a new stadium. But I think what he has done is, you think about the team and how the energy is. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit different. He's got a fifth quarter at the games. I don't know if you've heard of that, but after the game, you can stay in the stadium, and there's food and drink to buy and TVs to watch with other NFL experiences. And he's brought in Tom Glick, who is really known across the sports world as someone that really cares about how we use sports in a way to develop our market and our branding. So I'm pretty excited about, I think that he's come in and quietly in this community, he's making a difference.
Okay. You evidently were making a difference before you even started on the job. Your very first visit here, you had already been on New Jersey Senator Cory Booker's...
that's true.
What was it, a podcast, I guess?
Podcast, yes.
Where he called you a real change maker with a long life of service and an inspiration to him and the community. That was a quote. You've taken a couple of trips to the White House. You were involved in the bid and the acceptance of the bid for the Republican National Convention coming here in 2020. All of that put you kind of in a national spotlight. What does this say about you and about Charlotte?
I think it says that Charlotte is being recognized as a city that's on the map for the national trends and what's going on. I think even with the election of our millennial council members in our last election, it was what we're seeing now, more people, young people stepping up. But it also says a lot about our population of people that are here working every day and how they are growing. We're trying to grow a diverse economy beyond our banking and financial technology sectors, our energy sectors. I really think our city is in a place that we are still have the ability to make change happen in fundamental areas of service and quality of life.
We did not get the Amazon bid. We were passed over for that.
That's okay.
We are getting the Republican National Convention, which you've taken some heat. Are both of those things, the fact that we didn't get Amazon, but we did get RNC, are they blessings in disguise that we'll look back on in 5 years and say, that was a good thing?
You know, yesterday I met with a group of clergy about the RNC, and they talked about how they could participate in what they see as the opportunity to protest about the things that are national but as well support the community in understanding the importance of having the RNC in a peaceful way. So it is a significant event for us, and we're working really hard with the host committee and our own community. Chief Putney is already going out talking to the community about how to engage, what to expect. We're getting out in advance. We have 2 years to prepare for that, and we're going to utilize every day.
So we now, getting back to Amazon, we now know that they're going to, was it Staten Island in New York City?
I understand that, yes.
Good
Arlington
God,
in D.C.
Good God, why? Staten Island and Crystal City in Arlington, Virginia, which is right across the 14th Street mm-hmm. Bridge from,
right.
from Washington, D.C. Months ago, when this is all underway and we didn't know where it was going, people were speculating that Amazon was having these bids from 200-plus cities to be able to play each city against the other. They already knew, the speculation was, that they already knew where they wanted to go. And one of those places that people talked about was the D.C. suburbs.
Right.
And that they were just trying to glean information from all these cities as well, collect as much information about these towns as they possibly could. Should we feel played by this? Were we played? It has nothing to do with the city of Charlotte.
It doesn't have anything to do with the city, but I think that nationally the question is now going to be, should we be doing this kind of national competition, or should we be investing in the fundamentals of our city so that people say, I want to come? I do think it was a bit of a contest, but I can't speak for how Amazon thought that this would work out.
Was it a con job, too?
You know, some people would have that as an idea, but I like to take people with the positive intent to say that they perhaps did really think that if they heard more about what was going on across the country, they'd make that a factor in their decision-making. But I assume it's just one factor. There are lots of others because they've gone to two of the highest income markets in the country.
With the highest cost of living.
Highest cost of living. So what does that mean for Charlotte? That means that we really have to examine ourselves. We can no longer say, well, we have a great cost of living that your employees would like to enjoy. We need to go back and review. What are we doing?
Well, each of those cities have been promised 50,000 jobs. That's a lot of jobs.
I think they're getting 25,000 each.
Okay.
Each.
And well, that's
that
a lot of jobs,
lot.
Too.
A lot of jobs.
And many of those jobs are going to be paying, according to Amazon, $150,000 a year.
That's true.
Suppose we'd gotten those jobs paying $150,000 a year. What would that have meant for Charlotte?
I think that one of the things that Amazon was looking for was transit and housing for those folks. Of course, 25,000 people coming, if they came in and we built a place for their headquarters, of course that would mean that we'd get a lot of tax revenue. We got lots of impact upon, I think, what our arts and cultural scene, the creative area, and our technology area. So I would hope that we will get a chance one day to say we've attracted 25,000 high-paying jobs.
Because $150,000 a year, as high as that may sound, is not a lot of money when you're living in the D.C. suburbs or in New York City. That doesn't go very far.
That doesn't go very far.
It would go a heck of a long way farther here in Charlotte. Would they be paying that much money in Charlotte had they come here, or do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I just know that we're a city that you can come here, your employees can have a great place to live. What I think we've got to figure out is how to move people around the city. We've got to do a better job of
Braxton
that.
Braxton Winston tells me they are going to Long Island City, which is in Queens, not Staten Island. He's from there, I think.
Yes, he grew up in New York, and he probably knows the geography a lot better than you and I.
Well, thank you, Braxton. I appreciate you correcting me. North Carolina Commerce Secretary Tony Copeland says that the state's package was very competitive. Did the state submit a separate package from Charlotte's bid?
I don't know the answer
because
to
Raleigh,
that.
Because Raleigh was in the
Raleigh bid. Was in the bid. I think that the state represented the bids from North Carolina, but I'm not certain of that. If someone wants to FaceTime or call in and tell us that answer, yeah. I don't know.
And the Charlotte has been very tight-lipped about what was in our proposal. The Observer has tried on several occasions, I think four times over the last 12 months, to find out what was in it. What we said to those people that worked or didn't work. And now that we know we're not getting it and we now know where it is going, will we get a chance to see the bid?
My understanding is just like any other economic development process, we develop it and it's presented, and in this case it was presented by the regional partnership. And I would assume that now that the decision is made, if this were the city council, we would then open the minutes of the discussion, and that would be a public vote.
Well, the Observer reports that state law says that once a business has announced its plans to expand or locate a project in this state, or the business has made a final decision not to do so, the provisions allowing public records to be withheld no longer apply.
And that is accurate, and we follow that to the T.
So have you seen the bid?
I have not seen the bid.
Not even you have seen the bid?
Not even I have seen the bid.
Why?
Because I'm working on housing and jobs and mobility, and I knew this was a bid, and once we didn't make that list, in some respects, I'm talking about the work that we're doing every day.
Okay.
Now, Amazon is a big name, and it had a lot of press.
But it would have had significant economic impact, both negative and positive. So,
that's exactly right. When you think about bringing 50,000 people to a community, which they did not end up doing, that would actually fundamentally change the fabric of our community and require us to do things. So my idea is to do the things that we committed to work on as government. We're a participant in the economic development strategy, but that decision wasn't going to be made based on whether I saw the proposal or not.
Okay. But I would have thought they would have wanted the city's input.
I think I actually participated in filming for part of it, so I have to own up to that. Maybe that's why they didn't come, that I was in the video.
There were some very strange things in that video. I got to tell you.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen the video.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a very... We'll just leave it at that.
I have a lot of respect for a lot of our creative talent. I think Blues was in it, and he does great work. And, that's one of the other things. When we think about our city, let's say appreciation to our artists and our writers and our people that are making our lives just better by showing up and doing their own individual talent.
I will say this. For a bid that was delivered to Amazon in a wooden box, that video was out of the box.
Okay, well then,
that is
great.
Mission accomplished.
I'm gonna have to. Now that's gonna be on my to-do list. Go see what Mike Collins has already seen.
All right. This week, the City Council's Budget and Effectiveness Committee voted 3-2 to recommend 4-year staggered terms for City Council members beginning in 2021. When will the council at large take this up?
I'm glad you made that point. This was a committee recommendation to the full council. Usually what would happen is that we would have a session where the committee chair would report out the conversation and other council members would weigh in on, well, is this something we want to move forward with? This is big discussion in the local news right now. This community deserves the opportunity to have that discussion.
There are two Republicans left standing on the landscape in Charlotte. Both of them are on city council. They're the only two left remaining. That's it. The rest of them have gone off into the wilderness. Tariq Bakari and Ed Driggs. And both of them, I think, are on that committee.
Yes, they are.
Both of them said no.
Yes.
Why?
I wasn't at the committee meeting. We can ask Ed. We'll call in or Tark and let us know.
Okay.
I would expect that they were basically looking at, is this something that the citizens have asked us to do? Is it something that we have enough data or information around it? Is there support from the community to do this? So I expect they were taking a view that's perhaps more considerate of the process versus the principle.
So this was split along party lines. Do you think that when it goes to full council, it will also split along party lines?
I never predict what the city council is going to do, Mike. I don't feel like I advocate often, but I don't predict.
Well, where do you stand on it?
I stand on the idea that this is something the community has to decide. And I believe that given the ideas and the information and people working through the process, I don't expect we can do that in the next year.
Okay, I want to come back and talk some more about this with you in just a couple of seconds, and we'll also get into some other things like the election result and the importance of the women's vote in the outcome, not only here, but around
women
the country.
Rock.
And I want to talk about the bonds, because
That's
bonds
great.
That you advocated passed, all of them.
Yeah.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our monthly conversation with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles. She is here. We're talking about four-year terms, which was recommended by the City Council's Budget and Effectiveness Committee. It will go to the full council for procedural vote on whether they like the idea or not, and if they like the idea, what to do about it. And we'll talk about that in a second. And I asked you a moment ago where you stand on this, and you kind of tap-danced around the issue. I know you think that that voters should make this decision and not council members necessarily making this decision, but do you understand the call for it? Do you understand the reasons behind it? How do you feel about the reasons for it?
I do understand the rationale for it. I look back, and there's lots of reports around this, the latest one being a mayor from Mayor Venrude and Mayor Gant. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the question for all of us is, what would it mean? What difference would it make? And you have to be able to articulate that. Now, personally for me, the difference would be perhaps that, you know, you wouldn't have to have a campaign every 2 years, but that's not a sufficient reason. So the idea of articulating the staggered terms to have a group of consistent elected officials so that the turnover doesn't happen, that is really the question. Do we really turn over the council? Do we really see the ability for the citizens to say, well, I really want a chance to every 2 years review what you've done and how you worked for me, and whether or not we should do that all at one time or have a staggered term?
Well, of course, the reason people who are many, one of the reasons people who want to go to four-year terms is that if you're new to the council, it takes you about a year or so to get used to what you have to do and how to operate and where the bathroom is and where the bodies are buried. And then it's time to run again. Whereas a four-year term, you'd have three extra years to kind of get your feet wet and get your bearings. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's the argument that people would have for a more effective council to work together. And I think that that's valid. I also think that the growth of the city perhaps warrants the idea of, when we have as many new people coming in and we're growing as fast, do we really have the ability to think through how is our city working, what's going on, how does the council gel around those issues? And I think it does take some time. I think it's obvious this time.
What's the election cycle for a council member or for the mayor for that? When do you start running again?
Well, you know, that is a big debate, and I'm going to be very clear. I want to serve as the city's mayor. It has been the most phenomenal year of my life, and I'm excited about this. I also think that I can continue to govern until it's time to file for re-election. And I would expect that we file for re-election in July, and then we have a September primary and an election in November.
So it's not the presidential cycle.
It is not the presidential cycle. It's very short. So we would have a new budget by then. We'll have our planning retreat. We will have a number of activities as a council before filing for re-election election.
The two Republicans on the committee, Ed Driggs and Tariq Bakari, said no. They didn't think this was a good idea. Mm-hmm. You have said you think it should go to a vote of the people.
Absolutely.
If the council decides that that's the direction they'd like to go in, but not everybody on the council agrees with you. Mayfield thinks that this is a decision the council should make itself, and Ed Driggs, the Republican, says no. We should take this to the people. And that's what they'll be meeting to talk about, right?
When I they think come there back are a number of questions. This? First, do you do the four-year terms? Two, when do you do it? And then how do you do it? But the how really is about the community of the voters coming back, because even if the council does this, the committee has the ability to petition 5,000 names on a petition to call for the referendum. So the council may call for a referendum, or the community would call for a referendum.
And the council could say, yeah, we're going to make this decision ourselves, and then somebody could put together 5,000 signatures on a petition and overturn
that
decision. So why not take it to the people in the first place? Is that your logic there?
That is my logic. And in addition, I think you have to think about, well, how would you actually conduct, how do you educate the community? If your point of view is that we need those four-year terms, I think you have to have an ability to go out and have that discussion. You know, we have done so much work on citizen engagement that I know that people say these are tough decisions and the council can make them. But in my worldview or city view of this is that we are trying very hard to work with people to make decisions and not say this is the decision.
Okay. Andrew on Twitter says, should at-large districts be eliminated in favor of expanding the total number of districts in order to increase minority viewpoints and representation?
You know, that is the kind of questions that will come up as we talk about what kind of government we have. The other issue, Andrew, that I bring up is that we will have a census coming up, and we will have to redraw all of the council district lines after that census is done. So that is a good question to answer. Who should answer that, and when should it be considered? That's the question that the council is going to deliberate on.
We used to have all at large or
we
all
had
districts?
Seven. I think it was. We had nine council members, seven council members, all at large, yes.
So we went to districts at some point in the
past.
We
went to districts, I think, in 1973, when the idea was that many of the people on the council were of one race, one religion, one ethnicity, all of that. Right. And the districts allowed for more representation. You know, you live in a district, and your district can be 80,000 people, and that's the population that perhaps in 1972 was left out of the conversation.
Right.
So district representation puts people closer.
And who made that decision? The council itself?
This is Ron Leeper's Ron Leeper, who's really a great leader in this community in so many ways. But he, at that time, led the effort for district representation.
Okay, but was that a council decision, or was it put on the ballot for a vote?
It was supported by the community, and the council made the decision, and I think it was a referendum as well.
So election night and in the days that followed, we've seen success for Democrats, which continues to build as counts are finalized and recounted and results.
It's still being recounted
in a number of places now. And Democrats here in North Carolina broke the supermajority in the General Assembly. Technically, that means that Republicans in the Assembly can no longer automatically override a gubernatorial veto. What does it mean for Charlotte?
I think for Charlotte, it really means that we can work in a more bipartisan effort. Charlotte's a democratically majority city. You've seen that in this last election and even with our city council a year ago. And so when you think about that, when we are going to work with our legislators, we have to present what our community wants and needs, but do it in a way that they understand it. Often, I think the divide may be Republican and Democrat, but there's also urban and rural. There's also people that believe in, you know, conservative government, or, you know, all of those things are philosophies that we have and we adjust to. Having this ability to talk to the governor and work with him and the state legislature with more of a balance, I think, is a good thing.
Well, Ed Driggs disagrees with you. Yeah. Republican City Councilman Ed Driggs has some misgivings about the deep blue state, not in capital letters, but the deep blue condition, let's put it that way, of Mecklenburg and the impact that the recent election had on sweeping away all of the Republicans off the county commission and making some changes in the makeup of the Mecklenburg County delegation in Raleigh.
Conditions in Raleigh will not be helped by the outcome of our Mecklenburg election when it comes to the relationship between the Republican majority there and Mecklenburg County.
He believes, because you didn't have your headphones on, he believes that we will not be helped by the lack of Republicans here, given the Republican majority in Raleigh.
Well, I think that we'll have to wait and see how that works. But let me just, when you think about this, when you have gerrymandered districts legislatively, and when you have that whole focus on one party winning, and this is all across the board, but you try to get your party to win, I think that everybody has to pause and breathe for a minute and look at what happened. Because even with all of this going on, the voters came out in the largest percentage in recent history. People came out and voted for in ways that perhaps weren't automatically kind of a decisiveness. I mean, who would have thought districts 5 and 6 and 7 in the county commission, or I think it was 2, 6, and I remember it's Puckett and Weidenhauer and Bill James. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought that those weren't really strong districts? So you have to listen to people more than just say, this is it.
I've asked everybody else this, so I'll ask you. What do you think people were voting for or against here? Was this a repudiation of Donald Trump, or was it a repudiation of Republican overreach in the legislature? Or is it simply that the fact that, as some political scientists are telling us, the demographic makeup of Charlotte has substantially changed in the last several years, with 60 to 70 people moving here every single day?
I think that's a large part of it. I often tease Luana Mayfield that her district is growing to be the size of the city of Asheville. So when you think about what it was 10 years ago and how reliable you could predict that, I think that the council and 20 years ago thought that they would have three in three districts. One would be primarily, you know, geared towards Democrats. Three would be primarily Republican. There'd be a swing district all the time. I think that you can see the change in that now.
Well, one party for 100 years controlled state government. It was the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Now one party has been controlling the legislature, at least, for quite a while in mm-hmm. Raleigh. And we've seen, from Charlotte's point of view, sometimes the decisions that they made seem to be... they were like bullies, at least to us, maybe not to other parts of the state. Is one-party rule, even if the Democrats control it, a good thing?
I think a good thing is when everybody has to work towards the middle. Now, I get a lot of comments about that because that's what I believe. I believe that we shouldn't be on the extreme sides of anything, because when you're on the extreme and you listen to only the extreme voices, you're not really serving the people that are in
But it's not just the extremes. I mean, Democrats have one point of view, Republicans have another point of view, and you don't have to be on the extremes of either party to have that difference in a point of view. And when everybody on county commission is a Democrat and all but two people on the city council are Democrats, are you discussing the full range of possibilities, or are you locking other opinions out because you simply don't hear them? There's nobody there to represent them.
Oh my gosh, I wish I could say that we don't hear from both points of view. We really hear from every point of view, libertarian, Republican.
Nobody, but there'd be nobody there to fight
they're
for it.
But they're talking about issues. No, if we listen to people, when they come down and they represent a different point of view, mm-hmm. of course there's some hot button issues that are clearly divisive by party. I get that part. But when I look at the values in this community, again, go back. Don't people want to have a safe home to live in? Don't they want to have a good job? Don't they want to be able to get to and from work in a reasonable amount of time? I don't put those views on R's and D's. Now, when we talk about some of these other issues, I mean, you know, for example, when we think about what kind of discrimination ordinance we have, yes, there's going to be a deep divide. But I believe that you work best at what you've given the task to do, and you try to communicate and come together on these issues. I have a lot more confidence in our people to see through extremism and to look at values more closely.
You've also been talking to a lot of Republicans at the local, state, and national level because of this business with the Republican National
Convention.
Well, not
only that, I did that before the convention came.
But they seem to like, well, at least the impression is from the public appearances, they seem to like you.
Well, that might be a question that we ask.
So is that something that gives you entree in Raleigh to have serious conversations with people who may not necessarily like Charlotte or agree with you?
I think what gives me entree is that I am mayor of the largest city in the state.
They don't seem to care about that.
I think that that's what I represent. Mm-hmm. They don't have to care about it. I have to care about
right.
it. The other thing that I believe is that we look for those issues that we can work on. And there are some that we're never going to agree on, and I'm not going to sit and get into an argument over some things that we can never get accomplished. Our job is to work hard for the people in this community to accomplish the things that we can, and that's my job as mayor. Now, whether or not we will always agree, I believe in working towards what we can do and recognizing those things that we can't.
One elected Democrat recently told me that although you aren't necessarily in positions of leadership, you being women, women now run the Democratic Party. Period. End of sentence. Full stop. That's it. You're in control. You saw the women saw the deficits, the weaknesses in Democratic leadership, and decided enough of this. And they took the bull by the horns. And they're in office everywhere now. Do you agree with that? Women run the Democratic Party.
I don't know the answer to women. I know the Democratic Women of Charlotte-Mecklenburg is a very strong and healthy organization. We have really intense debates, and we represent the Democratic values of this of the party.
And nationally, women.
And nationally.
Well, nationally, women are coming, Democratic women are coming into Congress in record numbers, even as Republican women are leaving Congress. How do you explain that?
I looked at the collage of pictures of the Democratic nominees going to Congress, and it is diverse. It is diverse by religion and race and ethnicity. I looked at the Republican collage, and it is not very diverse. And this community, this country is a diverse community, and we've got to respect that diversity and welcome everybody into governing.
So if women run the Democratic Party, whether they're in positions of authority within the party or not, your numbers made a major difference in the outcome of these elections here and around the country. If that's the case, what changes will we see not only in the Democratic Party as a result of all these women being in control and in high office, what differences will we see in government?
Last night I went to two women events. One was called Lean In. It's a part of the growth out of the Lean In book and the movement there. And there were over 100 women talking about how to reinvent themselves in this new economy, how to create their own businesses and make their voices heard. And then I went to the women's group at Cameron Woods, which is a large suburban community neighborhood here in Charlotte. And they had each come in with two bags of groceries for the Second Harvest Food Bank. Now, two different activities and two different groups of women, but all about doing something different in this community. So that's why women are stepping up. More women are in law school, more women are in medical school, more women are in business school. What does that mean for us as a community and as a city? One of the very first things I think about is childcare, access to early preschool education, and the idea of how do we care for our kids as well as our parents. Because those are all issues that women care about, and I think that has a lot to do with the county services. And that's why I think there's some issues around having women represented when those decisions are made. It's been documented that when women are engaged in decision-making, the decisions are often made in a better and inclusive environment.
Do you think the presence of more women will have an impact on how politics is conducted and the way conversations about politics
Absolutely.
Are conducted?
Absolutely. Women talk a lot more about things that are impact their lives. And as they say, when mama's happy, everybody's happy. I'm sorry. That's just the way it works.
Yes, I know. All right. We're going to talk about the bonds. We're going to talk about the Republican National Convention when we come back. And I think we'll need to talk about guns in schools, too. So we'll talk about, I know you're not in charge of the schools, but we're going to talk about it anyway. It's Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mayor Vi Lyles is with us for our monthly visit. The bonds passed. No surprise, really, because the bonds usually pass in Charlotte. But this time around, it was the biggest ever bond for affordable housing. Normally, every couple of years, the city floats a $15 million bond. This time, it was $50 million. When will that money, which voters said yes to, start being used to increase supply of affordable or workforce housing here?
Well, I think, again, to the voters that supported all of our bonds, thank you very much, because we are stepping out to do things in a way that partners with the private sector, that addresses the key issues that we've been talking about of housing. So in housing specifically, housing is a complex subject, and it's a complex problem to solve. And we are hoping that we will be able, with the partnership we have with the private sector, begin to look at our housing framework, where we have said that 20% of all projects with public dollars would be for people, 30% basically, you know, people that are paying $500 a month in terms of rent. We would include those, and then we would go up to 80% of the average medium income, which is like $55,000 for a family of four.
But when will this money start being put into the system and making a difference?
It's been an interesting process, because we've had more people come forward now that they've seen we want to do preserve housing and build new.
Okay.
And I would expect that when the private sector has a substantial amount or plan for the raising of their $50 million, we'll begin to see those projects coming out.
We had James and Deborah Fallows on the program yesterday. They're writers, and they've been around the country looking at smaller towns than Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But one of the characteristics of all of the successful small towns, and he listed 10 or 15 of them, are public-private partnerships.
That's right, and that is key for us. And I'm also going to join a National League of Cities Mayor's Committee on Affordable Housing, and we're going to see HUD to ask them what are the plans from the federal government. We need to know some certainty about what they're doing so that we don't duplicate anything that's going on in the federal government so that we can actually leverage our dollars to the optimum amount for this project.
Katie on Facebook writes, I'm happy that the bonds passed. However, a serious review and update of the city's policies needs to happen. Much of the money has gone to subsidize developers building housing for people making much closer to average income. In turn, these same developers are being allowed higher density and land use perks for their project.
Let's dissect a little bit of that. All developers have developer fees, even if they're nonprofit. I mean, you know, we actually have to pay people to go out and get the real estate appraisals, to get the construction drawings, and to do the permitting. So we're trying to minimize those expenses so that we don't have to pay those fees. We're looking at a policy where if you have an affordable project, you don't have to pay the permitting fees due to the city. Things like that. We're going to try to work on that. The other part of this is the idea that we do not want to concentrate poverty. So that's why we are trying to build mixed income communities where there will be all levels of income in every project that we do.
The last time we talked about this, you said that this $50 million is a lot of money, but it's not enough.
It is not enough.
And even if the business community, whom you've also asked for $50 million from, and the faith community, whom you've also said they need to kick in $50 million.
Well, let me talk about the faith community, because we've said that a lot. And what I've said to the faith community is that I know that you're not going to be able to put cash in. But land, I've met with a number of clerical organizations, faith-based organizations, and they may be able to donate land, but they also can donate the resources and talent to make people successful. Putting people into a home sometimes is not enough. Mm-hmm. And so they can work on faith-based teams to come in that help offset the cost of social services. They can do a number of things. Charlotte has been a very strong community in terms of outreach in our faith organizations. And while it may not be cash, we're going to give them the opportunity to participate at that level so that we can come back and talk about this truly as an effort that was community-based.
But even that, you've said, is not going to be enough. Even the $100 million is not going to be enough. And when you look at the projects we talked about last time that are already on the drawing boards and some of which are being discussed, when a developer comes in and builds a high-density development, what they're talking about is adding one or two out of 30 or 40 units, making them affordable. That's not a lot.
And that's not enough for this project. We've got a whole new view of the world with this bond referendum and the effort that we're doing with the private sector.
What does that mean?
I think that what that means is that when people come in and say we're going to do one or two, we know that that's not going to help. That is not going to be a good use of the funding. We're not going to be able to come in and rescue developers or apartment complex owners that have let their properties run down on their own watch. We're going to have to be judicious and have a level of intense integrity about this funding.
When you say we, who runs all this?
Well, the watchdog. We are going to bring in an organization that's called LIS, and we're going to have an advisory committee and a citizens advisory committee, and we're going to ask them to weigh in on these. The decisions on the public money will be made by the Charlotte City Council. But we are not going to make those decisions in isolation. We're going to have the private sector through the Foundation for the Carolinas, as well as our citizen advisory groups. And believe me, Mike, we've got more advocates on affordable housing supporting this effort and willing to participate than any other public effort that I've seen. And so I'm really proud and glad that we're going to be able to do this with the level of energy that allows us to walk away from just making deals to building neighborhoods and communities.
There was a letter to the editor in the paper where somebody wrote, why not give the $50 million to Habitat for Humanity? We know that they'll build houses with it. And we know that low-income people who need those houses will be put into those houses, and they'll be providing sweat equity to do it. Why not give them the $50 million and just say, have at it?
I don't know if the writer knows that we do give Habitat
part of this money. Why not give them all
and
of it?
Because there's a capacity issue as well as an intentional goal issue. Habitat does build houses. They also renovate existing houses in neighborhoods and keeping people in homes and in place. But again, I think that this is an opportunity. Besides Habitat, we've got the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Housing Partnership. We've got other folks that are in this line of work. I think the foundation is solid with a number of organizations that can do this work that have been doing it. Yeah. We're going to work with each one of them to do the scale that they can do and accomplish.
Speaking of renovation, the City Council is considering spending $115 million, to expand and upgrade the Convention Center. When will that be decided?
That's actually coming up for a vote, I believe, before the end of the year. And this is using the tourism dollars that we have to update our convention center, to modernize it, particularly around the feedback that the convention center board of directors have heard from meeting planners. You know, we compete for conventions on a regular basis. I often send letters of support or go visit people that I encourage. I want them to come here because filling those hotel rooms is an important part. They generate the room tax. So when people say it's time to update, it's time to make sure that our digital operations are working, then we need to do that. So that's just modernizing.
How old is that building?
Oh, my gosh, Mike, don't ask me a tough question. I know it's over 30 years, I think.
It looks brand new.
I know. Don't we do a great job on maintaining the facilities that we have in the city?
And the car show is there.
Are you going?
No. So what?
I go to the car show.
Do you?
Yeah. They let you ride around in brand new cars, and they smell good.
Yes, they do. Let's not go there. That's okay. Why I'm not going. what is $150 million? What's it going to go for? What do they need to upgrade? And when you talk about $115 million to renovate what looks like a new building versus $50 million that won't even put a dent in affordable housing, how can we justify this?
We justify it because this community has had a long practice of having tourism dollars, people that pay the room tax, people that buy the food and beverage and rent the cars are generally not always our city citizens, but people that come into our city. And in order for that to continue and to continue to invest in tourism, 1 in 9 people in this community work in the hospitality industry. And a lot of that is due to the conventions that we bring to the city. So why we do it and what we're doing, we're adding more square footage. There are going to be some internal changes to cover some of the outdoor space for indoor space. And the idea of how all of us walk around with these cell phones and computers, we've got to make sure that works inside that building.
Are we losing convention business right now because we're not up to state of the art?
I don't want to ever think that we want to lose it. We want to fix it before we start losing.
Okay.
So we're pursuing everything right now.
Before we move on to something else, let me go back up a little bit because we've just gotten two comments from people about affordable housing.
Yes.
Kat on Facebook, how is the Citizen Advisory Board on affordable housing being determined?
We're going to have appointments to that process, and that will be people that will be selected with recommendations. You can certainly email me your interests at mayor@charlottenc.gov if you have an interest in serving, and I will pass that along to the organization list that will be putting together that advisory committee.
And Desiree on Facebook, how do we as a collective keep the upcoming affordable housing communities from becoming projects, or how do we create diversity in these communities if the communities are only for low-income residents? Seems like we may be creating separate communities. That's not how this works, is
it? That's not how it works. So the proudest I am of two neighborhoods that I think people don't think about. First Ward community, one-third subsidized, one-third public housing, and one-third market rate. The Cherry community, single-family homes all the way priced up to $500,000.
Or more.
But there are a number of buildings that will be, right now we've already opened our under 30 for a senior complex, a quadruplex in Cherry, and we're going to be doing more of that for 30%. Our idea is that great neighborhoods are created by being diverse, and it's also an opportunity to, I think, give our children a way to see this. I tell people every day, I grew up on a street where we had the barber, we had the barbecue joint owner, and my dad and a lawyer, all of us, and everybody went to work that day. Yeah. Isn't it great if we can provide those kind of communities so that people see the value in that?
The Republican convention won't be here for a couple of years, but you've taken some heat for your support of this, and people said at the time, we're a Democratic city, and now we know that's true because
that
the election makes the whole county kind of blue, at least right now. Does that make you want to rethink your support for this at all? Do you think that the people will be, this blue, the sea of blue will be happy welcoming this little pocket of red?
I am not rethinking the Republican convention. We've signed a contract with them, mm-hmm. and we're going to follow through on our obligations. The host committee is being formed. And the way that I see it, while we have had a blue wave, there are Republicans in this community, and we're going to respect everyone that lives here. So we don't necessarily, we have a majority, but that doesn't mean, I know what it's like to be a minority.
Yeah.
And to be ignored as a minority just because the majority has power doesn't feel very good.
Okay.
And a lot of our country and a lot of our policies were because we ignored the minority. And we don't need to repeat that here.
It's a great answer. But I'm going to ask a question that you've kind of already answered, but I want to ask the question from Dan on Twitter because he brings in some other points of view. Based on the recent violence inspired by the current president, have you reconsidered hosting the RNC? You have not, but and telling the world that Charlotte is a city of values, not one desperate for attention.
Dan, I appreciate that. I refer to the clergy meeting that I had, and they expressed the same sentiment. We do need to speak out against hate. We do need to speak out around our values, and we're going to work on messaging that. And I don't think messaging is right the right word. As mayor of the city, I'm going to be talking about the values that we have of inclusiveness, welcoming of diverse communities, and I am against hate and the groups that come out and espouse things that divide us and cause us to generate racism and all of that. I can't make a difference in the in what's going on across this country, but I certainly can say it for our city.
I know that schools are a county issue and not a city government issue, but we had a shooting at Butler High School in Matthews 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago. The very next day, a gun was found at Geringer. Guns were confiscated from students at Hopewell High in Huntersville. And this week, a gun was confiscated at East Mecklenburg High, and then a scare at Olympic High, all in the course of 2.5 weeks. Charlotte Mecklenburg schools have had a gun problem for years. They have more guns per capita than any other system in the state. But when you talk to Clayton Wilcox, the superintendent of schools, when you talk to Kerr Putney, the chief of CMPD, they all say this is not a school problem. This is a societal problem.
It is.
And that makes it a city problem and a county problem. How concerned are you about this, and what do you see the city of Charlotte doing about this, if anything?
Anything that we do, it's about defense, because this country won't go on offense about guns. You know, I read a letter in the newspaper, and it said, I'm tired of hearing my thoughts and prayers are with you. I think all of us are tired, sick and tired of hearing our thoughts and prayers are with you. We've got to do something about guns on our streets. I don't have an answer. Chief Putney is working on it. I think the school system is as well. But
is this all tied into the social capital study and the lack of being able to advance from poverty to a middle-class lifestyle in Charlotte? Is it all connected to that, too?
I don't believe that the guns are about being poor,
okay,
or being rich. I think guns across the board are a way of dealing with issues when you don't know how to actually handle conflict. And that doesn't mean it's because you're black or rich or white or poor.
Okay. We only have 10 seconds here, but Damon on Facebook wants to get your thoughts about metal detectors at CMS School. What do you think?
I think that we're going to look at every opportunity to support the decisions. The chief is in constant contact with the school system.
Okay. Because gosh knows you go through a metal detector to get into the city office building.
Yeah, but yeah. We have two entrances, you notice now.
Mayor Vi Lyles, thank you for being here. We do
thank
it every month.
Thank you, Mike. Always great to hear from you.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.